Listeners, who I know are also readers, have I got a summer book for you. If you haven't yet ordered Dying to Meet You, Serena Bowen's latest thriller with just enough romance, you have to. So, let me lay this out for you. Rowan Gallagher is a devoted single mother and a talented architect with a high-profile commission, restoring a historic mansion for the most powerful family in Maine. But inside, she's a mess. She knows stalking her ex's avatar all over Portland on her phone isn't the healthiest way to heal from their breakup, but she's out of ice cream and she's sick of rom-coms. Watching his every move is both fascinating and infuriating. He's dining out while she's wallowing on the couch. The last straw comes when he parks in their favorite spot on the waterfront. In a weak moment, she leashes the dog and sets off to see who else is in his car. But instead of catching her ex in a kiss, Rowan becomes the first witness to his murder and the primary suspect. But Rowan isn't the only one keeping secrets. As she digs for the truth, she discovers that the dead man was stalking her, too, gathering intimate details about her job and her past. Struggling to clear her name, Rowan finds herself spiraling into the shadowy plot that killed him. Will she be the next to die? You're going to love this. I've had a sneak preview, and I think we all know that Five Year Lie was among the very best reads and listens of last summer. Dying to Meet You is available in every format and anywhere that you buy books, and you could grab your copy, and you absolutely should, right now.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is #AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals, fiction, nonfiction, memoir. This is the podcast about finding a way to get your work done, and that is sure what we're going to talk about this week.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find my journalism over at The New York Times, Washington Post, and The Atlantic.
I'm Serena Bowen. I am the author of many contemporary novels, including Dying to Meet You, which is brand new right now.
Yay!
Yay!
Thank you!
Hey, Nash. I am the founder and CEO of Author Accelerator, a company on a mission to lead the emerging book coaching industry, and also the author of the Blueprint books, which help people get their books out of their head and onto the page.
And also, in your past life, the author of a lot of other books.
I know.
Forget about those.
I think it's worthy. I do. So I'm KJ Delantonia. I am the author of 3 novels and 2 nonfiction books, and the former editor and lead writer of the Motherlode blog at the New York Times. We have all had a number of careers. And the reason I brought that up, Jenny, is that I was just interviewing Kate McKeon, who has a new book about the mechanic. Like, it's a great book. It's called Write Through It. And it's sort of like everything we've ever talked about the podcast on the podcast, all the how-to stuff all rolled up into one book, which is really cool. But I was telling her that I kind of have a unspoken motto of only taking writing advice from people who have not published a book very judiciously. Now, my freelance editor is not someone who has, or I think, I don't know if she even wants to publish a book, and she's amazing. So with some thought, but my point being that you have also published many, many, many books. So if anyone out there hesitates around that, don't.
Don't.
Yeah. All right. That was a really lot of introductions. And we got something to talk about today, and I'm going to demand that Serena announce our topic because she came up with it.
Okay. Well, my topic is how to be present and devote yourself to your writing in a world that is so loud and confusing, and it feels like whatever you're working on can't possibly matter as much as what's going on in the world. And all my writer friends are struggling with this right now.
It's hard, especially when the work that I do, the work around like writing about kids and parenting and stuff, requires a fair amount of optimism and requires a fair amount of like, it's gonna be great. And here's what you have to do in order to make it be great. And it's been very hard for me lately to be in that headspace.
Well, Jess, I would argue that like at least you're literally helping people, and some of us are writing meet cutes and first kisses.
Okay, you are, no, but you are so helping people, because over and over and over again, what I hear from your readers and from readers of Happy Kiss, HEA and kissing books, that they are the self-care and the reprieve that they really need.
Okay. You just gave like the point at the top of the notes that I made for this discussion, because people keep saying that to me and they're not wrong, but for some reason it hasn't been enough lately. And I was struggling to figure out why. And then over the last 48 hours in a feverish rush, I read this Karen Slaughter book that's called We Are All Guilty Here that doesn't come out until August, but please pre-order it now and do yourself a favor because it's so good.
I love her books.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to have that same experience from the reader side of the coin, which is that I totally lost myself in this fictional world. It mattered to me as a person to work through those problems. In the way that a novel has a beginning and a middle and an end. And I think that part of my big problem right now is that I can't see an end to any of the stuff that's, you know, happening. So it was helpful to me to have the same experience that my readers described to me, to be like totally sucked into something and to feel like it mattered to me in the moment.
Well, and to add on to that, I had a fantastic, sorry, KJ and Jenny, we're just, we're off on our little happy tangent here, but I had a wonderful conversation with a fan recently at one of my speaking engagements, and she was apologizing to me for feeling like she had a really close relationship with me, even though we hadn't met. And she said, and the reason for that is that you're in my head because I'm listening to your audiobook. And I said, you do not need to apologize to me, because I have the same experience. And she said the thing that was nice, because I'm such a big audiobook fan, I feel this weird parasocial fictional connection to this person, because it's not just their words, it's also their voice. But the thing that she said was really sweet was she listened in her car, and her car became a place of refuge and a place where she knew she was going to hear a voice that would make her feel like it was going to be okay. And so even though I hear that and I know that, and I've experienced it from the other side with the audiobooks that I listen to, it is still very hard to look down at the empty page and say, how do I help people feel like everything's going to be okay? And it's a difficult moment for that.
I have been thinking about this too, because I think we all are. And let me just say that this is not just we're not making a grand political statement here, although we certainly could. This is a moment of some global turmoil. Whether you think this global turmoil is exactly what the universe needed or not, it is still, there's a lot.
It's just a lot, and it's all the time. And it's like, oh, did you hear this? Did you hear this? And I feel like I'm supposed to be paying attention. And then if I pay attention too much, I feel like my head is... So yeah, it's just a lot.
So what I want to say is, I think we have to get used to it. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be done. And I take some encouragement from all the writers who wrote their way through world wars, who mm-hmm. wrote their way through, enormous personal trauma, who have written their way through, enormous political turmoil in their own countries, both as, you know, people who were actually writing about what was going on, but also as people who were not. I happen to be a real stan of the World War II book about not like the drama of the war, but the home, the home fires, as they would say. Stuff like Diary of a Provincial Lady in Wartime and Angela's Thurkell. And it's just, this is what was going on. There's some stuff, I can't think of all of it. But anyway, I love that reminder that life went on. And I think we have had a pretty calm few decades, and that's been very lucky, but it's actually not the norm.
Yeah.
So we got to get used to this, kids.
Yeah, I just flew home from a trip, and Tim was watching on the plane. Tim was watching a film with Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen. You may know Wilfred Owen as the person who wrote, the Dulce et Decorum Est, the whole thing. These are the World War II poets and World War I poets, sorry. And yeah, they had a lot going on, and they were writing poetry. Yeah.
Well, I knew from the moment that Serena posed this question that I was going to be the voice of opposition here today, because I am seeing this and feeling this great surge of creative energy and people wanting to write, wanting to create, wanting to raise their voice, whether it is in opposition or as an act of rebellion or as an act of escape or just as a thing that they've always wanted to do, so they're finally going to do it. It feels similar-ish to me as the pandemic did in that way. And, you know, what I was thinking about, Serena, is that you are in the both enviable and also not enviable position of having done this a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how it goes, and you, not that it's rote by any means, writing a book is never rote, but the creative process is not new to you, I guess. And I have encounters with a lot of writers through the book coaches I train who are just stepping up into this and just raising their voice and just embracing that this is a thing that they could do. And this is a, you know, like I've seen people, you know, a lot of dystopian fiction, obviously wanting to be written, climate justice, social justice, you know, books from people who previously marginalized, even like satire about the crazy stuff going on in education, you know, in all genres, all realms. I just feel the people doubling down. And so I wonder if it's, you know, the writer friends that you talk to are largely in that same boat as you, very accomplished and in it. And I don't know, that's my conjecture, because I'm really feeling the opposite.
Actually, can I verify that through something else? So KJ and I have both mentored with the Op-Ed Project. It's about raising all voices to publish op-eds in newspapers, not just, you know, the people that we're used to hearing from. And they put out an email for their mentors because they said, this moment is generating so much interest in writing op-eds. So that's a good thing, too.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I also have to say that I personally have made a choice that is inspired by Oliver Berkman, which is I'm not paying attention. And I know it's a luxury to not pay attention to the news. And I know that it's a privilege and maybe not always a good thing, but I just made a personal decision that I can't right now, or I don't want to, for what it's worth. So I feel a little ashamed about that, to be honest. I feel a lot of times that I'm not doing enough when I catch a glimpse of what's happening or what's going on, or my husband is a voracious consumer of the news. So it's not like I'm not getting news. I just get it filtered through him and through my children, for sure. And I would also like to just give a shout out to this podcast, because sometimes through this podcast, I listen to Jess and Serena on a podcast you recorded a couple weeks ago about the pirate site episode, and learned so much, and it was so great, you know. So I don't know, I have to say that too, that maybe my stance is coming from a place of not being fully pulling the wool over my own eyes, I guess.
No, I think it's great that you are finding something, that you're seeing like a surge of positive energy. I mean, part of me, as I'm listening to you guys, wants to go, well, but you know, nothing I'm doing is a voice of protest or opposition, but that's okay. We don't have to be voices of protest or opposition. And we have to remember that most of the people in our country do not oppose this. So it's a little bit of a weird, I mean, it's a weird moment. that one's tough, but it's also true. It's not, it's just change. It's just, mm-hmm. it's just turmoil. But I love your point that there's excitement and energy in turmoil. Maybe this is also a question of sort of where you are in your life, like mm-hmm. you know, where whether the turmoil is exciting or stressful, or I don't even know where I was going with that. Okay, never mind.
Well, but I think there's I've been thinking just a lot about AI and where it's going and what's going to happen. And some days I worry and some days I fret and some days, you know, I don't think about it or whatever. But the thing I keep coming back to is you can't keep a creator down. You know, the creators want to create, and it's the process of that, the creative process, whether somebody, doesn't matter what they're writing, and Serena, that speaks to where you are, you know, they could be writing a meet cute or a first kiss or what have you, but the fact that they want to be a creator in a world that's on fire is to me the hope, the sign of hope. You know, I actually I'm about to take a trip to Amsterdam where I've never been, and of course we're going to go to the Anne Frank house, and I've re-engaged myself with that story and thought about it and looked at it, and it's like just the urge to create, the urge to put it down, the urge to do the thing. And maybe that was an act of protest as well, but you know, not a meet cute. But I believe in the power of the creator and of that. And Serena, you're so good at it, at that process, and putting yourself in that process and being in that process, and it makes me sad that you're questioning it in a way.
Well, you know, I don't know. I actually kind of disagree that that we can look away right now, because there's a lot at stake for the world that writers operate inside. And AI is really important because there's a lot of super important litigation going down right now about what is legal in terms of using our work to create AI and to not pay us for it. But also, there are other writers who are being silenced and having their student visas, you know, rejected. And it's only work of other people that is pushing back on this. So it's, in some ways, I can't really say, oh, it's okay for me to look away right now and go back to this scene, because there are moments that matter more than others. But in order to not give up my entire job at this moment because it's so distractingly difficult, what I find I've had to do is figure out which sources really matter and which parts of my day are productively informational and which parts are just anxiety producing. So by luck, I went on this long vacation. Long for me is like 9 days, but we'd been planning it forever because one of my kids is overseas and we were going there at his exact moment of having a break. So I had a vacation in a way that I haven't in a really long time. And I found that being off cycle from the news, really affected my the way that I took it in, and it improved my mental health, even though I was ultimately about as well informed as if I hadn't left, but I didn't have any time in the day to like scroll through the hysteria on Threads. I could only take in the news from a few like, you know, real sources. And that was really informational to me. Like I had not processed the fact that how I take in the necessary information affected whether or not it merely informed me or also made me feel like everything was lost. So that was pretty important. But also just the fact that that I've also been trying to be out in the world more and be where people are instead of looking at my computer screen. And it's not like a work smarter, not harder thing, but like choose your moments. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I believe that we still need to be engaged at this moment and to ask ourselves what is possible for us to do. But that doesn't mean we have to scroll through all the stress online all day long in order to get there. And to me, that's what's made the difference.
We've had a rule in our house for a little while now that I'm not allowed to bring up any newsy things or talk about any newsy things after a certain point in the evening because it messes with Tim's sleep. He would wake up, you know, churning about and thinking about whatever it was that I talked about from the news most recently. So any of those outrage moments are just not allowed in our house in the evening. And I think that's a really healthy barrier to put up and realize that there are points in my day when I can handle it and points in my day when I can't.
It's also possible that the thing that I could most usefully do to change things that I think should be changed is to give money to other people who are working to change them. Because, you know, we can't all, shouting on social media, not useful, right? I'm not going to run for office, personally. I do have a family member who does that sort of thing, and I love that, but I'm probably not going to. I guess check in with me in 10 years. There's only so much. When I think about, okay, what could I possibly do? Most of it is I can give money to people who are doing things that I want done. And the only way I have money to give to people who are doing things that I want to get done is to do my job, which is to write books. So there's that.
I would like to highlight, however, that Tim and I have both been periodically calling our representatives and having some really, you know, it's obviously not the representative themselves or our senator that we're talking to. We're talking to, you know, someone in their office, some college kid in their office. But the conversations have been fascinating. I've learned a lot just through those conversations. And they don't just sort of take your message and then hang up. They're willing to have a conversation. And it's been really fascinating. So calling your representatives is a really worthy thing to do.
Yeah, many decades ago, I was that person, and therefore I'm a little cynical about it.
Well, I do want to give a shout out right now. I've been watching one of my former students who ran for Mitt Romney's Senate seat in Utah as a Democrat, which is an impossible task, but she did really, really well. And she just got to open for Bernie and AOC at the at a thing in Utah. And so watching her or watching people who are, you know, really getting engaged and by a lot of them are younger people. You know, my thing is younger people. And so it circles back around to the more supporting I'm doing of people who are younger and people who are energized and excited about getting in there and writing the op-eds and speaking and running for office. That has been another place of reprieve for me.
So I would love to ask Serena about
kissing books.
Because something she said, you know, when she said I disagree, it got me thinking because I wanted to defend myself and I don't know and say, well, no, I'm not that terrible. I'm not whatever. But I, in listening to you talk, I was realizing that I really have prioritized my own mental well-being over anything else and in terms of checking out of the things. And I've heard you talk about this before on the podcast, but my default response, like on the piece you talked about writers and being under attack and what's going on. That's just one tiny thing that's going on in the world of chaos. But that tiny thing, I do tell myself, I can't do anything. I'm just one person. What can I really do? And therefore then I don't do anything. So, I do the bare minimum. I do the bare minimum, like I give money to Authors Guild or I'm just going to put myself out there as the avatar of the person who says that and doesn't do anything. And then, to be perfectly honest, feels a little smug when you're like, I'm dying and I'm wrecked and I'm whatever, because you're informed and you're actually doing things. and then I'm like, you should be like me and not do it. And then I feel bad about myself. So I just want to put that back as a conversation piece, because I know you have thoughts about that, that one person can't do anything.
Yeah, so I often feel like there's a lot of problems I would like to solve. And if I tried to take on all of them, then I would be paralyzed. Like, there would be nothing I can do. And also, there are moments when we have to really pull back and put our oxygen mask on before assisting others. Like, that is a totally legitimate thing to do. And when I had this experience of going on vacation, and then it was such a big reset for me, I thought, oh, you dummy. Like, that's like a thing I need to keep relearning, is that, oh, wait, no, sometimes we really do have to drop out for a little bit of time, because we will be more energized afterwards. But I bet that that one thing that you're supposed to do will announce itself to you fairly soon. You know what I mean? Like, it just because you're having this moment of pulling back and needing to do that doesn't mean that that's a permanent position for you. Like, I don't believe that. Like, because I know you care. So
yeah, but it's just interesting the different reactions and responses. And I often find myself saying something to my husband, which I'm not proud to share, but the thing that I say is, where is our leader? Who's stepping up? Whatever the topic is, or the area or the realm is, like, who's going to save us? I'm looking for somebody else to be the solution.
That's important, though, because part of that is just recognizing that without a power structure who knows what to do. Like, I've been lucky in that, like, I've spent a lot of time on conference calls with the Authors Guild, and I've found that I respect those people so much that, when the CEO of the Authors Guild, Mary Rasenberger, has an idea, that it's always worth hearing out, and not everything gets done or becomes a priority of the, but I know who to listen to. And that wasn't always true, so I've also subscribed to the emails from Authors Against Book Bans. That's another organization that has a lot of energy right now, and they're doing a fantastic job of paying attention. So, it's okay to pick one little realm, and that's lately been my solution. We need leaders, and the reason we're so frustrated is because the lack of true leadership, the lack of leaders who can say, I made a mistake, I don't know everything, I don't have all the answers. Like, that's the kind of people we need in the world, and they're pretty thin on the ground right now. So yeah, I totally hear what you're saying.
So, I mean, what do we have to say that's useful? I mean, how are we? We're all still working. I mean, you can listen to Jenny and I trying to write our book every week. And I happen to know that, Serena is nibbling away at mm-hmm. new drafts, as is Jess. So mm-hmm. we are doing it. We're just distracted.
Well, I always say that everything about writing, you have to learn more than once. Like, you learn it on a project and you figure something out and you're like, oh, right. And I think this is another one of those moments when how to reset yourself, how to, you know, how to find that moment of peace is maybe the lesson of the week. Like, even if you don't write the best chapter of your life between now and the middle of May, you know, you can turn your attention to paying attention to your inner voice and how am I feeling right now and how could I feel better? Like, do I need to go meet a friend in a coffee shop to work? Because that has been a real boon to me lately. Just being, change my scenery, change the hours when I look at my inbox. That's another thing that I've done right now. I asked my assistant to please watch this one inbox because I can't watch it myself right now. It's too much of people pulling on my arm. So just, you know, to turn some of the small levers that we have in our lives with regard to how writing fits into your life and see what's working. Like, it's okay to like break your strategy a little bit to see, you know, if you can shake up the problem.
I've been trying really hard to answer the voice in my head that says, I just can't do this right now with, well, okay, maybe you could. Like, what if we just sat here for another 10 minutes? Like, what if you just, okay, I hear you, like, to sort of like be the other side for myself. Like, okay, I hear you. That sounds really rough. But what if we just did this anyway? Mm-hmm. Just tried. And, you know, it moves.
Along those same lines, what's been saving me is, as you all know, anyone who's listened to this for a while knows, I love, love, love the research process. And I have a very big stack of books to get through that is research formative, sort of base level, foundational research for this thing I want to write. And hearing other people's ideas and hearing how other people put ideas together, and that just fuels me. And then on the fiction side, I've been, and I hadn't even realized I've been doing this until we started talking about this topic, I have been watching a lot of movies I love about the act of creation. I rewatched one of my favorites, Possession, with Jennifer Ailey, and it's just one of my favorite films about, it's based on the A.S. Byatt novel Possession. And it's about poets. And then I was watching a movie about a novelist, and I was just re-listening to the new Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown, and hearing about other people's creative process fuels things in me. And I, even just listening to the Bob Dylan movie while I was watering the garden, I was like, oh, I could go, I can't write music, but I can still write these other things. Wait, hold on. I'm a writer. And then you start realizing, oh, that creative process is accessible to me too. And, you know, whether it's the creative process that changes the world or the creative process that gives you an outlet selfishly, either way, I think it's important. And so I love digging back into other, and I've talked about, you know, re-listening to On Writing sometimes when I need that boost.
Isn't that funny that if Stephen King says, well, I spent, you know, 2016 not doing something but like writing this new book, we're all like, yay, you do that, we love you for that. And that for all of us, we're just like, oh no, you should be, you know, we should do what we do.
Yeah, I guess I always think about, there was a moment when I was so lucky to get to see Hamilton on Broadway. And I remember just that line about writing like you're, why does he write like he's running out of time? That idea that like the stuff just is coming pouring out of you and you've got to put it somewhere before it's over. You know, I love that feeling of desperation. And I get that from listening to other people's creations and other people's research and other people's creative acts. It's good.
That's very cool. That is very cool. I don't know. I guess I'm really good at, or lately have been really good at turning off the inputs, just because I have to. Too many inputs will just do me in. And so for me, it's catching myself floating over to social media, or catching myself clicking into something that I don't really want to read, like you're saying, Serena, at this time of day. You know, I sit down to lunch and I don't want to read that thing. So setting aside time to engage with that is like the only way that I'm able to do it. And I'll try to choose to read something longer, a longer form thing or listen to a podcast rather than sound bites or snippets of things. So I'm trying to be self-aware about not getting pulled down into the sound bitey things. That's what I mean by disengaging is, you know, I'm not going on threads at all. I'm not going on, I sort of can't even look at Facebook or even Instagram. It's just all too much. And especially Instagram, where, you know, you'll have all these calls to action and then bathing suits. I mean, maybe that's just me, right?
You're right. It's different.
Very jarring.
You can't control which bits of it. Like, at least if you're looking at the Times, or the Wall Street Journal, you're getting a section. Instagram is like, this terrible thing just happened here by this Jenny Kane sweater while you think about it.
I mean, it's very jarring. Yeah. It's very jarring. So I don't wish to be there. And I do have to give a shout out to Substack. How great is it to be able to read things without all the noise and distraction from the people that you choose who are smart and saying smart things. That's the thing that I choose that I really like, and kind of toward what you said, Jess. I happen to be reading the memoir from Billie Jean King called All In. It's so good. And it's, I mean, talk about just a person who lived her values and made massive change and understands how change is made and is paying it forward in her life. And it is so inspiring. And it's not quite the creative act, but it, I guess it's creation of change, but I find it hopeful and inspiring. And I think that's where I come up with the question of who's gonna save us? Like, where's our person to lead? Like she was at the time when women's, not just athletics, but equality. She did so much for women's equality and still is, you know. So it makes me hopeful that such people will be rising up and I will be able to identify and support them.
I just finished listening to and reading on the page. I did it both ways. Permission by Alyssa Altman about having the courage. It's a memoir and the courage to create. And she also articulated for me just how wonderful it is to, I don't know, even if it's not out for mass publication, sometimes writing things down that are the stuff you've gone through and the way you're feeling, that's just worth it in and of itself. But anyway, that was a lovely book. I highly recommend Permission by Alyssa Altman.
But also, I just want to say, and this has sort of suddenly popped into my head. So I'm working on a book. Surprise! I'm trying to do something bigger and different that says a lot of things, and I have thoughts about it, and I actually think I need to shut down input for I can't do this if there's a lot of stuff pouring into me all the time, and I think that's fair. I think sometimes, I mean, I was thinking about the person who wrote Permission, and I was thinking, you know what? I'll bet she didn't read a lot of while she was writing that. Things that were shouting at her that you know, the better thing for her to do would be to churn butter in a nap dress. I think she probably took some time to do that. And these poets that we're talking about, they're not writing a poem, you know, line by line in between reading threads. Posts, they're putting their time and energy into their work. And this is kind of what we've been saying all along, moderate it, choose your things, pick your moments. And maybe, you know, some time of quiet to hear what you think about what's going on, as opposed to what everyone else thinks about what's going on. And to let that, to give yourself permission for that to be whatever it is. Maybe it's not what we think, you know, maybe it's something different. That's okay. So I want to shout for that, for, okay, do turn it off, work on a thing.
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm Jenny's point about taking your news from social media is totally different than taking your news from the front page of your favorite newspaper. And I guess to KJ's point that if we turn off the voices that are serving us the least well at this moment, what we might find is that there are more hours in the day to both get our work done and then have a minute to say, what else could I do? Is that donating my time somewhere or just getting my own house in order? You know, I find I have more time to do things that matter when I am spending less time in the loud places that aren't serving me personally.
Agreed.
So well said.
I think we should end it there, mainly because we've run long, but I'm really grateful for the four of you. My last point was going to be that my saving grace has been realizing recently that that it's the people in my life that I want to invest in. I had a realization. Someone told me some news via someone else, and I didn't realize how disconnected I had become from the people that are real in my life and how much more attention I was paying to people I don't know anything, people who I don't know that I have a parasocial relationship with. And so I have sort of a mid-year goal, which is to make sure that the people who are actually in life real important to me are most important to me. And so I've pulled back from those parasocial relationships and gone toward the real relationships. And I'm grateful so much for the three of you. I feel like you all rescue me in moments of doubt. So thank you.
Yay. People are a good use of time, as our friend Laura Vanderkin says. So Jess shouted out the book Permission. Mm-hmm. I think if anybody else has a useful book for this moment, I want to offer up, as we have before, Meditations for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. It is a series of 4 weeks worth of basically 3-page long thoughts on how to deal with our own inevitably limited lives and personal resources. And I love it. Does anybody else have anything that would maybe serve people in this moment?
Serena, nothing to serve. Jenny has the Billie Jean King. I mean, Billie Jean King stuff is fantastic. Yeah, she's amazing. All right, well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the podcast. We're so grateful for you because you're why we get to keep doing this, and this is fun. And we love flattening the curve for a learning curve for other writers. So until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.